hate to be the one to have to break this to you, but if you had reservations for a table for two at that first weekend of indoor dining since last March?
We cannot go ahead at this point in time.
Despite good numbers on coronavirus in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, local officials are tapping the brakes on our phased reopening. And it's especially hurtful in the restaurant community. They were hoping to have had indoor seating starting this holiday weekend.
I mean, this is just heartbreaking, you know?
In this edition of 880 In Depth, not so fast.
People need to be diligent. They need to be not deluding themselves into thinking that this is over, because it really is not.
I'm Tim Scheld from WCBS News Radio 880, and thank you for joining me for 880 In Depth. This is the weekly deep dive from the WCBS newsroom to give more context to a story or stories happening in our area. And there seems to be no bigger story here than the development of coronavirus hotspots in communities across America as we hit the July 4th holiday weekend. Dr. Erwin Redlener is the founding director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University. And from where he sits, he's watching some troubling things across America.
So what you have is a lot of people relaxing everything, going to bars, going to beaches, crowding together, not wearing masks, and that is a powder keg.
Our Peter Haskell got on the line with Dr. Redlener this week to talk about the pause in reopening and the idea of a local quarantine for visitors to our area from hotspot states. But first, New Jersey was ordered on pause on the reopening on limiting indoor dining just days before the July 4th holiday. And as you might imagine, it caught many off guard. We spoke to Mary Lou Halverson. She's the president of the New Jersey Restaurant and Hospitality Association. She called it heartbreaking that people who prepared to open this weekend and who even bought food and supplies now have to keep their doors shut. She spoke to our Peter Haskell.
I've heard of situations people are putting that, you know, they were spending their own or using their own personal credit cards because they have no business revenue. And so they're using their personal money and with no means to pay it back. I mean, it's just heartbreaking, you know. And it's being done all because, you know, certainly there was a few bad actors and they should have just went after enforcement and enforce the executive orders and shut down those businesses that aren't doing things right, rather than shut down a whole industry.
How challenging is that, though, to get towns or police or who does it? And how do you go to all these restaurants, especially in towns where there are a lot of them?
Well, I mean, I think social media has become kind of the police of that. That's what he saw. And I believe that's what he reacted to, are the pictures he saw on social media. So whether it's the local police or the ABC, if they have liquor licenses, I mean, you have enforcement agencies, and that's their job, is to go out and enforce. So certainly you can send them when you see situations like what we saw this weekend.
Based on the number of these images that we've seen, is that practical?
I don't even know if there's, I mean, I've seen maybe five different places. So certainly, I mean, they're out there all the time prior to COVID. So I'm sure that they certainly have the capabilities, the state police, the local police, and the ABC to do that. We're not talking about an overwhelming number of people. We're talking about a handful of bad operators.
The new guidelines would have allowed 25% capacity inside. Put this into perspective for us. How significant would that have been?
Well, it's real significant for those businesses that don't have the ability to do outdoor dining, which is about 40-45% don't have the ability to do outdoor dining. So, you know, for them, it certainly is a big deal. And it also allows when there's, you know, bad weather like what we saw this weekend, it allows them to bring people inside and serve them.
looking at what the state does going forward, what kind of guidance would you like to see to allow the most amount of restaurants to open in the safest manner?
So obviously the guidelines that were set forth were a great start. And if he's concerned about, you know, what he's seen, then do things like, you know, allowing only eating and drinking when you're sitting down. You know, things like that will reduce the ability of people just kind of wandering around drinking.
Did the governor overreact?
I think so. I mean, I understand that he's concerned about the safety and health and welfare, but, you know, just based on, like I said, a few bad operators, you have enforcement tools. Use that before you go to drastic measures.
The fact that this is the 4th of July weekend coming up, how significant is that?
Well, and I'm sure that's probably what his concern was, because it was 4th of July weekend. So I think he was concerned that there would be an overabundance of people here. But in the same regard, you know, these small little restaurants that aren't doing anything wrong are dependent on this weekend, and they've already prepared for it. I mean, so now they have brought all this food in. I can't discount that enough, that how much money now these guys have all just spent preparing their restaurants to open.
How much of it is also just the psychological setback that they thought they were going to be there, and then all of a sudden they're not?
Mm-hmm. I mean, these people who have, you know, they're losing their homes, you know, and we understand that obviously public safety is important, but these people are providing, trying to provide for their families. They're employing people. They're losing their homes. They're losing their businesses. You know, that is important, too.
With all of this said, how does this change the picture going forward, the viability of restaurants in the state?
Well, you know, before this, you know, mid-June, it was anticipated that about 23% of restaurants were not going to come back that had closed. With this, it's just, now that will just escalate the number tremendously.
That economic impact is not lost on Dr. Irwin Redletter. He's been a steady resource for us here at 880 In-Depth these past few months. He's the founding director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University. And truth be told, he also helps counsel some governments on their big decisions about reopening. He sat with our Peter Haskell to assess where we are in the COVID-19 fight halfway through the year 2020.
Well, on April 27th, we issued a report from my center in which I warned that the states were planning to reopen far too early, far too soon, acknowledging the pressure to get the economy going and get people out and about again. It was not safe then, and it is not safe now in many places around the country to be going out and about. And that's been, you know, it's creating a huge problem. And I'm not surprised that states are hitting the pause button or, you know, reversing some of the policies that they had been proposing. So I think we're getting exactly what we anticipated.
What is it that concerns you the most?
What concerns me the most is that we're nowhere near the end of the so-called first phase, first wave of this pandemic as it manifests in the United States. And we see a shifting around of hotspots from not all that long ago when we had New York and the metropolitan area really unbelievably in danger with overwhelming pressures on the hospital system and so on. That is now, of course, jumping to the Sun Belt and places like Arizona and Texas, where there are massive outbreaks now. So this is also exactly what is expected in the pandemic, that it's in one place as an epicenter, and then that slows down and it gets to another place. And the more we give a message out that we're sort of getting back to normal because we're starting to reopen, the more difficult it gets to control it.
With that said, is the virus any worse? Is the virus different, or is it just a matter of bad habits?
Well, the virus is capable of mutating, of course, like any virus, but I don't think that's what's going on now. What's going on is that we've had too rapid of a relaxation of the public health rules that we needed to be following, and the most dramatic example of that is, of course, the fact that so many people are refusing to wear face masks. In some ways, that's become symbolic of defiance and political partisanship, which is very unfortunate. I mean, we don't have a medication to treat it. We don't have a vaccine to prevent it. All we have are the basic tools of public health, which include wearing masks, physical and social separation, and contact tracing. And none of those are where they should be. So we're ending up with some very difficult new hot spots popping up around the country.
You have people in our area who were effectively locked down for a couple of months, and obviously they're tired of being cooped up. How do you convince people, hey, sorry, you got to, you know, back it down a notch and stay inside again? Can you do that?
Well, I think the governors and the mayors are in a very, very difficult situation because they, as far as I'm concerned, jumped the gun with reopening. And that message was taken, as I was saying, as, we must be getting back to normal. And then you have this situation exacerbated by the president who refuses to wear a mask or say definitively people should wear a mask. So what you have is a lot of people relaxing everything, going to bars, going to beaches, crowding together, not wearing masks, and that is a powder keg, and that's what we're dealing with right now. It's very unfortunate, but people have to understand that if we're going to control the spread, we're going to have to follow the rules. As much as we want to get, you know, out of the lockdown and into normal life, we must follow these public health rules, or we're not going to see the end of this for even longer than we currently think.
What would you suggest right now? Do you want to see things dialed back further? And if so, how much further?
It depends. If I was in Arizona, if I was in, you know, Houston, Texas, if I was in places in the Carolinas or Florida, I would be very strictly and aggressively dial back. Other places, maybe in New York, New Jersey, need to go on pause. In other words, not keep moving from phase to phase until we have better contact tracing and more general control. So this is going to be not a one decision that's going to apply to the entire country. It's going to have to be very carefully assessed in every location. But the more relaxed we are about the public health controls, the more likely it is that we're going to see a resurgence.
But you understand that people are just tired of this. They've had enough.
I understand that people are tired of this. The Redlander family's pretty darn tired of it also. We all are. It's exhausting. It's depressing. It's very confining. These are experiences that none of us have had before, and I'm very sympathetic to it personally, as well as to the public health, matter of public health policy. But this is really, it's a decision that has to be made. We have a crisis. We have a pandemic, the likes of which we haven't seen in more than 100 years. And, you know, people have gone through much worse than we're experiencing now. You think of the people in Europe in World War II, or the people during the Great Depression here, or the Dust Bowl, where these crises persisted for very, very long periods of time. We're talking about years of hardship. And unfortunately, you know, we'd like it to be over, and we'd like to get our businesses open. We'd like to get local economies bustling again. But, you know, right now, it's not necessarily safe. So we're making a choice between, yeah, we're tired of it. We don't want to be cooped up. We don't want to be restricted. But then we have to accept the fact that if we don't do those things, we'll be encouraging new and significant surges in the disease.
We hear that in New York and in New Jersey, they want to keep people out of restaurants. They said they were going to open them. They want to keep them out. Is that a good idea?
I think the probably the worst locations that get to be gathering now are inside bars, and restaurants are a close second. And if you don't know whether the kitchen staff and the servers are actually negative today, I don't see how you could view that as something that's safe to do. So I have long objected to early opening of bars and restaurants.
We've heard the governors of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut talk about a 14-day quarantine from people coming from states with high infection rates. Is that a good idea? And would you like to see something stronger?
Well, you know, you're talking about quarantining people who are coming, let's say, from Arizona.
Correct, like, correct.
It's not clear whether that's a good idea or not, frankly. I think, first of all, it'd be extremely hard to reinforce. So what you'd be able to do, I guess, is check license plates. So if a license plate is from a state with a high infection rate, you might want to not have those people come in or have them quarantine for 2 weeks. On the other hand, a lot of people can come in and, you know, they come in other ways where they can, you know, they could have driven their New York license plate car to Arizona and been there for 6 weeks and now are just returning. So on paper, it may be a good idea. In practice, I think it's very complicated and very difficult to implement.
With increased illnesses, we see higher rates of hospitalizations. The New York area was really crushed in the early going, yeah. March, April. What concerns do you have about a repeat of that, where the hospitals just get overwhelmed?
New York and the metro area were represented the epicenter globally of this of the COVID-19. And the hospitals were filled up. The hospitals were overwhelmed. Could that happen again? It could. It depends on how many people are still vulnerable. I mean, you know, we've only tested a relatively small percentage of people, and we have a general idea, but there's still plenty of people who are very susceptible. So could we have another situation that involved a huge rush on the hospitals again? It's possible. And it could be a younger age group, but it's certainly not out of the question.
This is the 4th of July weekend coming up. People, they socialize, they have backyard barbecues, they go to beaches and lakes and campgrounds and the like. What concerns do you have about a weekend like this, and what do you tell folks?
Well, if it's an outside event and you're separating from others, you know, you could make a case, as long as you've not been having illness or whatever. It'd be better if you knew whether you were positive or negative and whether you had antibodies. But in the meantime, I would still highly recommend wearing masks and sustaining social distancing.
People need to be diligent.
Yes, people need to be diligent. They need to be not deluding themselves into thinking that this is over, because it really is not. You know, and even if it was waning right now, almost everybody thinks there's going to be a second wave and maybe a third wave, you know, as the months, you know, go on.
So, as much as we all want this to be over, not so fast. Our thanks to Dr. Erwin Redletter and our Peter Haskell for his thoughtful conversations contributing to this show. 880 In-Depth is a production of WCBS News Radio 880. Its executive producers are Peter Haskell and myself, Tim Schell. We call this 880 In-Depth. It's a weekly podcast. We work hard to give you more context on important stories, and we're here every week. You can be too. Just subscribe and listen to us on your time. Go back to listen to some old podcasts as well. Just download them or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and search for 880 In Depth. Have a good week and be safe.